It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
About Lon Kruger retiring, huh? Lon Kruger retiring at Oklahoma. Shout out to the K-State men's basketball Twitter account for some awesome pictures of Lon from back in like the 70s when he was here at K-State. There's a picture of him playing baseball with the Cats. Like, man, old school Lon Kruger. I tell you what, you talk about a guy that has not aged hardly a day. Lon Kruger looks remarkably similar to what he did as like a 21-year-old. Derek Young from K-State Online is with us at The Young Rivals on Twitter. Would you agree with that, Derek? Has there been a coach that has aged more gracefully throughout the country than Lon Kruger?
Yeah, he still has the same facial features, the same swoop of hair. He looks oddly similar to what he did when he played at Kansas State. I will say, back then, we see pictures of him, you know, on the Twitter account for Kansas State men's basketball. Looks like a really good athlete, too. I never got to watch him play. Obviously, his number's in the rafters, but he looked like he could really go.
Well, somebody could find me some Lon Kruger highlights. I would love to watch them. I really would. Mitch, what are you making fun of there? Don't show me. Why don't you make fun of it?
He's sporting the unibrow.
You got a problem with unibrows? You gonna say something to Lon?
I'm pretty sure the unibrow has never been cool. That has never been in any way, shape, or form a fashion statement.
Well, you know what's really cool, Mitch? Millions of dollars in a Final Four. That's what's pretty cool.
He didn't get there as a player. This is a player picture.
Okay. Derek, I'm sorry to cut you off.
He didn't keep the unibrow, right? Like, that's something that left, right?
It was not in every single picture I've seen of him at that point. You are, like, so enamored with this picture right now. You have this...
I'm looking at the others.
Blank-eating grin on your face.
Oh, my God. It is. Okay, so I'm looking at the picture now where it's, like, four players... in front of a Hearn Fieldhouse, and man, that unibrow really sticks out. I mean, it catches your attention.
Maybe it was in style in the 70s, Mitch.
See, I don't know that for a fact. I don't know if that's really a thing back then, but boy.
All I'm saying is it seems like he's done pretty well for himself, okay? So I am certainly not going to make fun of any unibrow, especially on the day that he's retiring. He's retiring, man. Can't you just let it go for one day? Just celebrate the man and his career and accomplishments.
Hey, Comedy Central for years has been doing roasts, and it's to honor a person. I am roasting Lon Kruger in honor of his 45 years in coaching.
Okay.
Can I roast him for a little bit here as well?
Please.
I will say Lon Kruger retiring today probably means one less win for Kansas State next year.
Ooh, that is true, man. That's a great point because Bruce Weber absolutely dominates Lon Kruger at Bramlage Coliseum. That should have been the lead from the outset today. Derek, was K-State just lost one W for next year on the schedule? That's so right. That's so true. Okay. Well, Mitch, if you have anything else, if anybody throughout the show, by the way, at J.O. Kurtz, at The Game KMAN, if you'd like to roast Lon Kruger, you're more than welcome to contribute to the roast of Lon Kruger today, which is apparently how we're going to show our appreciation for everything he's done for our university as well as everything else that he's accomplished throughout his career. How about you made it to the Final Four one time and lost by 100. Boom. Take that, Lon. Congratulations on your retirement, buddy. Who did they lose to? I forget who they lost to in the Final Four.
Was that the Blake Griffin team?
No, it was Buddy Hield. But
you're right.
I feel like they lost by like 55 in the Final Four. I don't know. Mitch is on it. Mitch will look it up. All right. Derek, we have a big news story from yesterday. Gene Taylor gets a contract extension through 2026-2027. He is now going to make $925,000 starting next year. That's up from what would have been $700,000 for the upcoming year. There was also supposed to be a $250,000 retention bonus at the end of this year. I don't know what happens with that now at this point. Let me just start with initial reaction to seeing that contract news for Gene Taylor.
A little cringy, maybe a year too soon, to be honest, just because some of the, what do you want to call it, you know, chatter from Gene Taylor, some of his answers and responses to even on your show on Wildcat Insider, or, you know, to seeing schools like Iowa State and Texas pay these very large buyouts. And I realize those buyouts are like north of $10 million and his raise is like 200, 250,000 at most, or not 200. Yeah. Yeah. 200, 250,000 at most. So those are wide gaps, but when you're kind of bristling a little bit over how much is being spent during a pandemic, taking a raise that might be about 30% just doesn't completely square away with me as being something that is, you know, appropriate.
I think it's complicated. I will admit that the optics here are not great simply because of it being a pandemic, right? That was always going to be a tough sell. But a couple things to keep in mind. One, it was, you know, we were coming into a contract year. Like, his contract was going to be up at the end of the next school year. So this is about the time that you would be putting together a contract extension. So there's some element of, like, the timing didn't work out very well here. If this would have been done, I can't say a year ago at this time, but like a year and a half ago at this time, pre-pandemic, nobody would be batting near as much of an eye. Because, like, what's happened is basically just bringing Gene Taylor up to like market value with athletic director salaries, which if the problem to you is like AD salaries are crazy, then yeah, I mean, Jack Swarbrick at Notre Dame makes like $3 million a year, but the Big 12 in particular, I mean, Gene is still in the bottom half of the Big 12 with a $925,000 per year annual salary. So I'm not bothered by it. I'm really not, because I think the idea is that K-State wants to be trying to play with the big boys, or at least like acting like they belong in the Big 12. And this is something that you really had to do when you were coming up on a contract extension with your AD. I know that people will say, like, it's not like basketball is hitting it out of the park right now. It's not like football had a great year. Again, timing, not the best. But if you think he's doing a good enough job to keep his job, you pretty much have to give him a new contract. And then if you're paying the going rate, you pretty much have to pay him what you did. So I'm just walking everybody through the logical steps of how that got here, and I think that's the proper way to analyze it, even if the optics aren't that great.
I would agree. It is complicated, and you probably can't just push it forward and let it ride for another year if you know, the following year obviously is going to become a contract year anyways, because you want that security, stability as an athletic department, especially in these trying times. I totally get that. It's not necessarily him getting a raise in a pandemic that eats at me a little bit, because I think bringing him to Big 12 market value is something that is, I wouldn't say required, but something that was probably preferred. And I think you want that as an athletic department. The only thing I bristle at is just, we've heard him kind of complain about the financials all year. And if he knew that this was going to be in the cards, I maybe would have lightened the language if I was him on some of the comments he made at other schools, if you're going to take a 30% raise. And because he probably was aware that that was going to be the case at some point. I'm sure he wasn't completely ignorant of that. So I just, yeah, I guess, or, you know, just take the same salary for one more year, even if you got an extension, just put it backloaded or something, you know, and maybe they will, I don't know. It's just, there's a little bit of hypocrisy in here that doesn't, you know, completely sit right with me.
Yeah. So I can understand saying just ride it out for another year at the current salary, like pandemic, everything that's going on, money seemingly being at least somewhat of an issue with some of the things that have happened here this offseason, just ride it out for one more year. And then do it at the end of next year. I don't know what K-State feels like the risk in doing that would be. Like, if they fear that Gene would be going somewhere, if this is more about like loyalty and guiding the athletic department through a pandemic. I don't proclaim to know like the specific reasons for that. I would guess that they have them. To me, the most legitimate gripe here that I would have is, like, honestly, if I were a fan, and I know that Gene has not said any of this publicly, and nobody has said any of this publicly directly. But I would be like, look, if we're hanging on to our basketball coach right now because we're worried about a $2 million buyout, and we're not making changes to the football coaching staff, if finances have anything to do with that, then I don't want to see the athletic director getting this kind of a raise. Like that to me would be the most legitimate gripe in all of this for me.
Yeah, I would say my two final comments on this is, one, I think it deserves to be said that Gene was one of the many people within the athletic department that did take a 13% pay cut this past year. So I think that is a part of the equation that needs to be considered and at least brought up, and out of fairness to him and what's going on here. And second, I don't know what's completely going on, and maybe he's getting a little, you know, nibbles from other athletic departments. I don't know. One that would make sense would be Iowa, as Gary Barta is a little bit longer in the tooth. So if they started to poke around, maybe Kansas State wanted to get it sewn up and Gene Taylor locked in as well.
Which, yeah, then I think a lot of people would hear that and be like, well, let's debate the merits of what kind of a job he's actually done, which is something we can definitely do throughout the show today. But I think the bottom line is, and again, we come back to what has happened here, he's not done a job that would get, that's like a fireable job, certainly. There's a lot that still remains to be seen, and there's a lot that's up in the air, but he has not done a fireable job, and if he's not done a fireable job, this was going to have to happen. Like, K-State hired him pretty much on the cheap, because I'm looking right now, the bottom of the Big 12 in terms of AD salaries, Gene was at $650,000, which was 59th in the country and last in the Big 12, and then Shane Lyons at West Virginia made $870,000. Which was 39th. So you're talking about a difference there in $220K. Like, that's how much less Gene was making than next to last in the Big 12. Hell, Jeff Long was making $1.5 million to be Kansas's athletic director. So just to put that in perspective, if you were going to do a contract extension and you're not going to be, one, insulting anybody, or two, proclaiming yourself as like some small-time athletic department, the number was going to have to come up to about the range that it was.
And I would agree with that totally. And in terms of the job he did, I think there's one misconception. Everyone just thinks he's, you know, kind of this easy guy to work for. And he probably is. And that he's just nice to everyone and has never made any drastic moves. They said, you know, no changes whatsoever, which is funny because out of the, I guess you want to call them major sports, three major sports, he's essentially fired two of them, in, you know, the football coach and the baseball coach. So it's not like he's just been status quo either. He's actually made some considerable changes. I think some of that gets lost because a lot of times any more moves like that are considered retirements or mutual. But he has made significant change on the coaching front already, in my opinion. And then in terms of the facility upgrades, they're underway and they have huge plans for them. So he's obviously on the right track in that department as well.
Yeah, I think to me the biggest thing, if we're holding up his accomplishments, and you just said it, handling the football situation.
Bill Snyder thing was sticky for several years, dating back to John Curry as the athletic director before him, where it was always on uneven ground and nobody knew how to land that plane when it came to Bill Snyder. And, you know, to his credit, he did it without many bumps in the road. So, you know, kudos to him on that front.
A lot of grace with how that was handled. Because, again, yes, retired. We know Bill Snyder retired. Gene Taylor had a lot to do with what was happening with that, and it did not come out and burn the university or the athletic department in any way. That is worth, to me, a raise of at least being like at market value. Now, we can discuss like what it means with the Klieman hire, and he's already tied K-State into Klieman for a long time, so that can change. And as with anything, when you're presented with new data, things can change. If that goes down the tubes, then you'll look back at it and say, okay, bad idea. But as of right now, you can't do anything else with the information that's here. Regardless, we'll move on. We'll talk some football with Derek Young coming up next. We've had a couple of football press conferences so far this week. We'll talk with Derek about the spring superstar and tell you who that is next. Take me out to the bar. Lon Kruger is retired. Gene Taylor has an extension. A lot going on today. We had a football press conference, not only today, but one on Tuesday. Me and Derek having to do a lot of the heavy lifting. Pretty much just me, you, and Fitz, right, DY? Like, nobody, you know, other media outlets. I shouldn't be doing this. This is facetious. I'm just kidding, everybody.
Where is Kellis?
I'm just kidding, but Derek, Fitz, and I had to do a lot of the work today. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying that we worked very hard. I think we earned our money today, Derek. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm ready for another vacation at that point.
Okay. All right, good. Well, we have a star of spring, and that is Julius Brents from Iowa, the Iowa transfer. Here is Joe Klanderman on Julius Brents.
I think he's been outstanding. I think in the transfer market, I think we went 4 for 4. And Julius is somebody that established himself right away as a dominant athlete, an alpha male type athlete. He's learned what we're doing. He's transitioned really well into what we're doing. He's made plays. You know, he's not a guy that just does it right but can't make the play and finish when he gets the opportunity to. He's going to be a good one. I mean, he's going to be somebody that people will know.
I just have to say, I just realized this. After I said that and called everybody out for us having to ask all the questions today, I was like 20 minutes late to the one on Tuesday because I had the original time for it instead of the updated time, and I didn't pay attention to the second email. So I immediately rescind my statement, okay? Now back to Julius Brents. Sounds like he's a beast, and this is a guy, Derek, I remember you saying people at Iowa felt like was an NFL corner. How excited are you about the potential of Brents with everything that we're hearing?
Well, I'm really excited because everything we had heard when he signed the papers to come to K-State was, you know, this kid can be really, really good. He was just unhappy in Iowa, wanted a change of scenery. He was a future NFL talent. And guess what? That's what we're hearing. It's not like that stuff was just like, you know, an exaggeration or hyperbole like when a kid signs. It's all coming to fruition from everything that we've heard. I mean, even Colin Klein was asked about the defense today. Who's the first guy he mentioned? Julius Brent. So, I mean, I just love everything we're hearing because it matches what we heard a couple months ago. And I just have to say, in terms of what Klanderman, how we described him, I love the term alpha male athlete. I think we need to use that phrase, or hopefully we're able to use that phrase more and more because that's incredible.
The fact that it's alpha male or the fact that it's alpha male combined with athlete?
Well, I like alpha male just in general, but when you can put alpha male athlete together, I think it only makes it that much better, especially when we're talking about a Kansas State corner playing in the NFL. They've sent a few corners to the NFL, you know, the last 5 years. It's the one position where they've kind of churned out NFL talent in a somewhat regular fashion. So it seems like they can maybe continue that tradition.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Duke Shelley and DJ Reed, are either of those guys like 6 foot? I mean, like they're small compared to Julius Brents is the point that I'm making, because he is listed at 6'2", and that's the kind of size, and what you always hear about with him is length that K-State really has not had a corner in recent years, even with the best of the best that they've had.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for him, and like Klanderman said, 4 for 4 on transfers. I would say, when we spoke to Joe Klanderman and some of the defensive players on Tuesday, I mentioned this, I think, on Twitter and on our site, that the three guys that seemed to get the most love, even if they weren't directly asked about, was not only Julius Brents, but transfer defensive tackle Timothy Horn and in the freshman defensive end, Felix Anadike, that played a little bit last year as a true freshman. And Horn has really got some praise today from Buddy White as well.
Yeah, but do you see him as a starter, or do you see him as just like a rotational piece? Because I guess my question on that would be, out of the 4 for 4, and I'm not really questioning that they feel like they hit it out of the park with their needs there. It sounds like they certainly did from an attitude standpoint, and we'll see about the on-the-field stuff. But do they have one starter out of that group? Do they have maybe two? What do you think?
I think two, maybe three. I think the jury's still out on Russ Yeast, and it sounds like Munoz is probably going to back up either Cody Fletcher or Daniel Green at linebacker. And then I think Russ Yeast is probably just depends how it all shakes out between now and fall camp. But I obviously Brents will probably start, will start. And I think Timothy Horn's going to start. The way they talk about him, how big and athletic he is, and the way he moves, and some of the things I hear behind the scenes, I'm not sure I would put them on the same platform in terms of how much he's being raved about in comparison to Julius Brents, but it's not that far behind, in my opinion.
Okay, so I think that's the difference in opinion we had. I guess I was just under the impression that Horn was more than likely going to be like some depth there as opposed to a starter, but you feel like he's starting material.
Yeah, I think obviously they have Jalen Pickle still there, I believe, and maybe Eli Huggins too. And I don't know how the pieces are going to look a little bit differently if they have a little some new wrinkles to their defense, of course. But I think they view Timothy Horn as a frontline player.
Okay. Derek Young talking with me from K-State Online at the Young Rivals on Twitter. One thing Joe Klanderman I would say, played somewhat coy was tweaking the defense. Here's what he had to say when asked if schematically things were going to change.
We've tried to get ourselves in the best structure possible, but we haven't gone crazy with anything this spring. That's insanely different than what we've seen, just because we want to get better at the things that we do. And I think last year we fell into the trap a little bit of, we're going to scheme this and that, and we're going to, you know, scheme, and then the best laid plans always fall apart when you lose two guys on a Friday, or, you know, the lineup that you have out there just can't physically do some of the things that you're asking them to do. And so we've experimented with a couple of things, but by and large, we're doing what we do, and we're just trying to do it better.
So how much of that do you think is playing coy, and how much do you think they have been experimenting legitimately with changing the alignment of the defense?
I think some coyness there, and that's completely fine. I mean, hey, we can only share what they tell us, right? And at the end of the day, was it a couple of weeks ago that T. Denson said we put in a new defense? So, I mean,
oh, that's right. So, forgot about that.
So some of those things just don't go hand in hand. I mean, it makes sense to kind of not completely reveal all of your secrets, and I wouldn't expect them to. But that's why I called it wrinkles. I don't know how much they're going to transition from one thing to another. That's something that none of us know. And I think there's new wrinkles. I just don't know how much they'll use it, but I think they're going to use some different stuff that we haven't seen before.
Well, speaking of Joe Klanderman, he said something that I think would catch virtually anybody off guard about one of the position groups on K-State's defense. And we'll play that for you coming up next. Back here on the game, Derek Young is with us from K-State Online. I think most people's concern list with the football team for the upcoming season would start with linebacker if you were to pick out a position group. Here's Joe Klanderman, though, saying something that, I don't know, maybe assuages some of your fears there. It certainly, if you take him at face value, would do that.
Honestly, if I had to say right now, I'd say our linebacker room is probably our deepest room. You know, we've had some guys that have really come on there. Obviously, Deuce Green and Cody Fletcher are guys that have played a number of snaps for us. But, you know, we made the move in the middle of last season to put Ryan Hennington at linebacker. And he's had a tremendous spring. We moved Wayne Jones to a spot where I think he's a little bit more comfortable. Austin Moore is a kid that's come on. Nick Allen's a kid that's been in the program that's come on. Keenan Gaskin. I mean, I can name a lot of guys. We've got a lot of good competition in that room. So I feel very comfortable with the athleticism that we have in that group, the toughness that we have in that group. I think that's a group where we're going to have some depth.
All right. So how much coach speak is that, Derek, that linebacker is the deepest position group that they have?
I would probably feel that way about the defensive ends first and foremost, but they probably, and I get that some of it may not be top tier depth, and I get some of it is still unproven depth, but they're so thin in the secondary and kind of on the interior of the defensive line where it's almost kind of a process by elimination where they have enough guys that they feel better about at linebacker than they do in the secondary and on the defensive tackles. I would still take DNs over linebacker, but you know, I did a podcast, the KSO show with Grant Flanders, and I kind of said, you know, if you really, really dig into the weeds of what is going on the defensive side of the ball and realize some of the holes that still remain in the secondary, despite some of the additions, you know, filling some of the voids that they already had, there's still more voids there. There's still maybe some depth concerns, you know, after this year at defensive tackle as well. But at linebacker, like he said, you can reel off those names, guys that have already played, you know, a decent amount of football. I mean, you're talking about Cody Fletcher and Dino Green, who started some games last year and at least have gotten starter snaps for 2 years now. And then you're also talking about Wayne Jones, who's had, while not at linebacker, starter amount of snaps on the defensive side of the ball. And then you're talking about Eric Munoz as one of your transfer additions. So I don't think it's that much of a leap to say what Joe Klanderman did, but I would bristle a little bit with him on defensive ends.
I think I actually believe him on that. Like, I can understand how you would say, yeah, we have more depth in terms of like bodies and at least scholarship level bodies at linebacker than anywhere else. But the problem is, do you have more than just like replacement level scholarship bodies at linebacker? That's really the question to me, and I'm not sure how much of a yes that answer actually is. Now, I know Steve Stannard, the linebackers coach, was on today, and he spoke very highly of Daniel Green and Cody Fletcher. They certainly are projecting that they feel like those two are ready to step in and be the starters, and everything will be honky-dory. I don't know. I've not seen enough from either one of those two guys to totally buy it. Like, I think we all feel like Daniel Green has the potential there because of his recruiting pedigree, but he seems to have just been all right, you know, in his role as a backup linebacker so far.
I would agree with that. I think he has the potential to be much more than that, but I do think that he has been probably average at best in his career. But yeah, they're probably talking about depth in terms of just snaps and college football played. And there's actually quite a bit still there at linebacker, just because you moved Wayne Jones there and signed Eric Munoz. And I would just say that, and maybe I'm speaking relative to what we saw from that position group last year, whereas I don't think that group has to do a whole lot more to be better than the unit was a year ago. I know that the linebacker play wasn't completely as depleted as the secondary, but they didn't get a top-notch caliber of play from that unit either. And even while they were probably below average for most of the year, the defense stayed in relatively good shape for most of the year. It was not – the defense broke down when the secondary broke down. So I don't have a huge concern with linebacker. Even when I thought they were getting below average play, the defense as a whole was putting up some pretty solid numbers.
Yeah, that is – I forget that you have that opinion. You kind of go against the grain with that in terms of how you feel about linebacker. I mean, I hope you're right. I do hope you're right. And linebacker, I can understand how you would say it's not – like, it's not as important to have, you know, three – like the 1998 K-State linebacking core, like three Hellraisers there who were just awesome because you're playing three linebackers all the time. Secondary, much more important. Pass rush, much more important. If you could pick a unit on the defense to be the weakest of the three, I think you'd go linebacker in football in 2021. But
I would agree with that, especially since you're going up against almost every week in the Big 12 against spread teams that are throwing more RPO action at you. With every year that passes by, they put in a little bit more RPO action. And to put it in layman's terms, in a really simple way about it, those RPOs, which is a run-pass option where the quarterback can do whatever he wants there, hand it off, run it himself, throw the ball, those really are designed to put the linebackers in conflict. They don't know what to do at that point. But some of the answers from a lot of defenses in how they defend that, and specifically Iowa State, and I think other teams are starting to adopt it a little bit more. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about, what Kansas State's probably going to slowly work towards as well. Is you'll probably have less linebackers on the field even if these wrinkles that we kind of believe are going to be happening, they'll probably have less linebackers on the field this year than normal too.
It is a sad – you got to like pour one out for the linebacker these days. Like the linebacker has just lost all of its luster. It used to be like – you know, the most boss dude on the defense was just a total animal of a linebacker, like middle linebacker, boxy, giant shoulder pads. Like, think Mark Cimino out there rolling around for K-State, and that just is not the case anymore. Now we're talking about, hey, let's just play six defensive backs, okay? Let's just go dime the whole time and not have any more than just one linebacker out there on the field.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, or basketball in general, the NBA, college basketball, it's like a positionless game. We're getting to that point on the defensive side of the field because that's almost what is required to kind of slow down some of these really spread offenses that can do a number of things and have all the firepower in the world, whereas the hybrids are becoming more valuable than any linebacker. It's like, can you play linebacker but also maybe play a little defensive end? Can you play linebacker but also cover a slot receiver one-on-one? And that's what made Isaiah Simmons so valuable, both in college and in the NFL.
Yeah, the Olathe product who went to Clemson, for those uninitiated there. I'll tell you what, one thing is that they have sold me on, that's actually this, Wayne Jones at linebacker.
You know, one of the things that Wayne struggled with as a safety, was tackling in space. That was never his deal. You know, we moved him into a spot – a lot of times that safety where he would move into the box and be part of the box fit. And we always felt like he had a really good feel for that, really good footwork, was able to keep himself square, was able to make tackles in close quarters and be physical and get off blocks and be slippery in there. But when we backed him up off the ball, there was times when he struggled to make some of those plays.
I actually felt like that's a pretty good explanation. Like that was the thing we talked about with Wayne Jones, was that he wasn't a very good tackler. Like, how is he going to be at linebacker? And that, I can buy that explanation, that if he's back further off the line and there's more space to cover and you're a little bit more out in space than just being a linebacker and coming straight downhill, I can buy that makes a big difference there.
Yeah, I guess, long story short there, we're talking about his athleticism being too limited to really go one-on-one in space with any wide receiver in the Big 12. And that's probably the case. But I think, in a roundabout way, that's basically what we are admitting at that point.
So you still don't seem very convinced about this idea of Wayne Jones a linebacker.
I think that was his issue at safety, but I'm just not convinced that it won't, leak into another position. I guess I need to be a little bit sold on whether he can just tackle in general. I thought tackling was his, flaw, and obviously it was, but I don't know that it completely goes away at linebacker. I have to be sold on it a little bit, but I do like the fact that they're experimenting with it, because he's played so much college football already. I mean, we're sitting here kind of criticizing a guy that was basically, he started 12 games as a redshirt freshman, was going to start all 12 games at safety last year before he got a concussion or he got hurt. I forget what it was. Then he came back and he was essentially the backup nickel. So he's had a really interesting path. And I guess I'm just not sold on which way it'll go from here. When he's done at Kansas State, the adventure that he took from position to position is going to be a precarious one.
My biggest question is how the guy added 15 pounds by just eating chicken breast and broccoli, because
and steak.
Yeah, but even still, you need the carbs. You need the calories of the carbs if you're somebody that's moving around as much as he is being a college athlete. That didn't make any sense to me.
Well, let's do the challenge. Let's do the steak, chicken, and broccoli challenge. Call it the Wayne Jones challenge. No bread, and see what we look like in 2 months.
I don't know that there is any amount of... Well, me or you could put on 15 pounds doing that. I don't know that Wayne Jones could. Like, if you were putting us through spring football practice or winter conditioning, more appropriately there, I don't think that we'd be able to put on 15 pounds. I digress. Hey, whatever works. Mike McGurl is coming back to K-State. We'll ask Derek his reaction to that coming up next. All right, so Mike McGurl is coming back. Your reaction to this is positive or negative, Derek? Because I'll be honest, like, was kind of in the middle. I was like, okay. I feel like they need somebody with some experience and to be able to score the ball a little bit with Dejuan Gordon gone. Not that he was a huge scorer, but that's 9 points per game gone. But I'm also not overly enthralled with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle too, but I guess I lean more to him staying now that we know Dejuan Gordon is fleeing Manhattan as we typically see from the Kansas State basketball team almost every year. The part that makes me a little concerned is that I don't think him as a primary option. And obviously, hopefully that fades, the longer that Nigel Pack and Selton Miguel and Davion Bradford are in the program. So hopefully that fades a little bit, next season even. But there's a part of me that will always think that Mike McGurl is better as a number three or number four option, and I'm sure he disagrees with that, and that's fine. I want him to have all the confidence in the world to believe that he is a primary option on the offensive end. I just don't think that skill set suits him as well, and I think the results kind of bore that out this year. So, but at the end of the day, Dejuan Gordon's out, so keeping Mike McGurl becomes a little bit more appealing in that form. And I'm just also not convinced, I have to see it to believe it, to believe that they're going to bring in a player at this point in the calendar that's going to be pretty impactful on the offensive side of the ball for them next season.
What's your gauge on where all that's at? And I say that knowing that this transfer portal year is going to be totally wild, and it seems like it's already headed there if it's not there already. But, you know, with the options that are currently out there, like the Brandon McKissick kid from UMKC, like what is your confidence level right now in terms of K-State getting somebody that's been out there so far?
I think there's going to be plenty of appealing options that they're probably going to be tied to and try to pursue, and probably more so than any other year, just because this is the first year where we saw it with football. Now we're seeing it with basketball, the first time where you have all these kids that are believing that they're going to be able to transfer without penalty. And I think that's going to be the case. So you'll probably have even more players that have been productive elsewhere. I mean, there's some high majors that are losing nearly their entire starting fives, that the guys that started and played a ton of minutes and played for a high major school that made the NCAA tournament. Even. So it's pretty nutty right now. So there's going to be more opportunities to bring in a player that's probably been pretty productive and has a chance to be productive in Manhattan. And I think it's all preliminary right now, though. I really do think that most of these players and most of these schools, Kansas State included, are still in the, you know, I guess the blind dating phase where they're still trying to get to know one another and see what they want, what the school needs. And I don't think that there's that many marriages that are really close to being bound together. So I think we'll know much more, I imagine, in, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks.
So you don't feel like Brandon McKissick right now is a very viable option for K-State?
Yeah, he might be. I would consider him a viable option, but he even mentioned how he's not necessarily tied into making a decision until perhaps the second week of April. So that's still two and a half weeks away from now. So I think everyone's still in the feeling out phase. Kansas has offered him, but do they have some other guys that might be above him on their pecking order? They probably do. Missouri's biting a little bit. So I just don't know if we're certain on what all the schools are going to be in play for him.
And by the way, my apologies, Kansas City. Keep saying UMKC. Kansas City. Sorry, Roots. I understand. I get it. That's Derek Young, K-State Online. You can follow him on Twitter at The Young Rivals. Derek, we appreciate the time as always.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, Mitch Fortner's roast of Lon Kruger continues next in Hour 2 on the day of his retirement. That is how we honor his career. But also, we'll dive deeper into the Gene Taylor contract and what that means, the contract extension next year on The Game.